Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, let me grab the headphones. I'll get dialed into the studio. Get these dogs to shut up. Oh, goodness. I better close the window or the neighbors are going to get mad. Hope the guests call in tonight. I wonder if anybody's going to call in. Well, let's do this thing.
It's Rated G Radio, and this is your host, Jarrett Miller.
Welcome, everybody. It's Rated G Radio, and it stands for Greg Archer tonight, because Greg not only is my special guest tonight, I'm going to label him my co-host, and I'm not even going to do a regular introduction of him, because I've already got him live on the line. Greg, welcome. I say, making your triumphant return to Rated G Radio, but coming back to Rated G Radio all the way from Palm Springs, California. Greg, are you there? I hope you're there. I've unmuted your line. Well, let's try this again. We're going to try unmuting Greg one more time. Greg, are you there?
I think I'm here. Are you there? I think I'm here.
I don't know. You know, esoterically, it's really hard to discern that at this point in time. So how's Palm Springs today?
On some level, I don't know where I am. It's,
no,
you know, it's great to hear your voice. How are you, Garrett?
I am so grateful that you're here today, and I know that sounds silly because, you know, for all the regular listeners and longtime listeners, everybody remembers Greg from 2013. He was our regular Tuesday night contributor for Pop Culture Roulette and all things having to do with entertainment. And towards the, it was about this time last year that Greg calls me and says, Garrett, I need to have a talk with you. And I always know what that means. You know, it's not like, Garrett, I'm going to pay you a lot of money or something crazy like this. And he goes, I've got to go write this book. And I said, Greg, go write the book. You must do this. If you did not do this, I would be furious with you to call into, you know, my, you know, radio show that draws like 400 million people a week to its ratings. You must go write your book. So Greg's been off writing his book, and we stayed in touch, and we chit-chat on the book of face and on telephone every once in a while. But I'm so delighted and honored that you have chosen to come back and spend your Monday night with us to talk about your book, Chasing Grace. So we want to hear all about that. But before we get to it, can you catch the listeners up on what you've been doing for the last year?
Oh, my gosh. How much time do we have? What have I been doing?
We have 58 minutes, so we got to keep it quick.
58 minutes. Okay. 58 minutes and 59 seconds.
Yeah.
I have been getting out of my own way for the past year. I tell you, it takes grit. Now, if you try this at home, I would suggest, you know, like having multiple partners and having a good support group with you because, you know, sometimes it's not so easy. I joke, but I'm not really joking. I've been devoting a bunch of time to create space to step into finishing this big project, which has been, I guess, a decade in the making, but more, you know, just kind of a rigorous last 2 years of really writing and finishing this wild memoir about me and my Polish family and the underreported story of the mass deportation of Poles from the 1940s, which they survived. So pretty much, you know, the last 2 years I've been in that sort of frame of mind, you know, 1940, 1941, 1942, the 40s. And I've come up for air here and there, and I know a lot of Starbucks around the country now because I seem to have penned a lot of chapters in every single one of them. Yeah, nice baristas, you know. Good to
there
see
you
them.
Go.
Good to see them get through college working, you know, in these Starbucks. I'm thinking of, you know, that might be a good second career for me. Anyway, so, yes. And as I'm talking to you right now, I am sitting underneath, you know, a street lamp, and it keeps going off and on. And for those that might know me, I tend to think that's a sign or something. I don't know.
I mean, it's probably one of your relatives saying, "Greg, you're on the air tonight. This is really cool."
I don't know what it is, but you know, I'm sure maybe it's a defaulted, you know, like light, but I, you know, it just keeps going off and on. So I think something's going on here. So yeah, in a nut, am I rambling like the rivers?
No.
Is that what I'm doing? Yes, I'm rambling. So that is what I have been up to the last few years, and now the book is done, and it's in the process of being, you know, put together and molded and created, and that's exciting, and it comes out in January. So yeah.
That is really, really cool. Well, we're going to get to so much about the book, but before we do that, you had a little celebrity interview today with somebody who is, like, hot on Broadway right now. Can you tell us anything about that, or is that strictly in the QT?
No, yeah, I'd be happy to share that. Well, we all know Lucille Ball, right?
Lucille Ball. Yeah, that name rings a bell for some strange reason.
Yeah, you know, well, she and I talked today. No kidding. Lucy Arnaz and I were on the phone for about 30 minutes today. She is going to be starring as Bertha in Pippin. And
wow.
She'll be, yeah, so she's in Denver right now for a few weeks, and then she'll be in San Francisco, and she'll be there for a few weeks, and then she'll be doing, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 weeks on Broadway, replacing Andrea Martin, who wants to go on tour a little bit to Los Angeles and do it there, and then they'll swap again, and Lucy Arnaz will be on tour again, you know, because now there's a big, the tour of Pippin is going across the country. So, and for those that are Pippin fans, you know, you must know that this, you know, when Tony's last year and everyone's been really eagerly awaiting for the tour to happen. And it's a lot different from what it originally was. I mean, as people may have come to know, there's a lot of circus element in it, sort of a little Cirque du Soleil stuff going on, and a lot of the characters that were just sort of in it as characters are now part of like a big ensemble. So it's a lot more interactive than it was originally, and there's a lot more circus stuff going on, and it's all symbolic of. Or in a sort of a metaphor of what goes on in our mind, the circus in our mind, so which is sort of what hopes to accentuate as well as, you know, searching for the meaning of life and trying to find, you know, satisfaction and this and that. So yeah, she's great. She's very exciting, very full of, you know, pep. She's 63. She's, you know, been in the business for, you know, over 45 years now, I think.
Wow.
And, yeah, mostly, you know, stage, singing.
She's,
you know,
a great actress.
She is. I don't know if people, you know, in their 40s and beyond might remember back in the 70s, she did their Playing Our Song with Robert Klein. She was a really great musical. You know, check it out. It'd be kind of cool if they revived that. I don't know how they would do that. They would have to really put some modern elements in it, but it was about two songwriters that meet and fall in love. It was sort of loosely based on, I think, Burt Bacharach and some other
Carol
stuff.
Bears,
but yeah. So it, really great musical. And you can probably YouTube it, and you can see her a little bit. I think they performed it probably at the Tonys at one point. So I think I found something on that a while back. Yeah, so we had a really great talk, and she was telling me a little bit about her dad, and I was hoping to get some, you know, stuff about her mom, but I think she had a lot of, you know, kind of good advice from her father, sort of, you know, take each wave as it comes. I kind of like that. Kind of neat to hear, and to sort of, you know, I don't know what everyone else is going through on this Full Moon Monday, but mine was very scattered. It took me a while till about 5 o'clock to get a little centered, but which was around the time I spoke to her. And she was just, she kind of just brought it home. She's like, you know, just she loves being in the show, and she's just like, one of the things she's learning is just to just, like, be in this moment, enjoy the moment, try to find happiness in this moment. You know, happiness is now, find happy now, you know. She's really great. She was really, really great. So it was really great to connect with her.
Can I ask a question? Refresh me, because I kind of have lost track, even though I try to keep, you know, my stalking pencil really sharp with you, Greg. Did you go to New York and actually see Pippin on Broadway? Did we talk about that?
No, I really, I've been in a Starbucks for 2 years. Yeah,
okay.
No, I haven't.
So
I've been in a coffee shop writing this book. I wish I had. I mean, it's my favorite musical. I was so ecstatic when they revived it. I'm like, oh, my God, Pippin, and does anyone know about this? And so now it's great that I get to write about it. So.
Well, and the only reason I ask is when I was in New York is about a year and a half ago now, and I was, you know, Facebooking everybody, and everybody's saying, you have to go see Kinky Boots, and I went to go see Kinky Boots, and then they said, well, now you have to go see Pippin, and you know, it was kind of like one of those divine intervention types of things where, you know, I got the last ticket, and it was like third row center type of things, and by the way, never having been to a Broadway show ever in my life, so not knowing what to expect, and then sitting third row center, you're going like, holy cow, I am really in the middle of something special. So, and I'm asking because I had no idea what to expect. All I heard was, you must see Pippin. Well, that's all I needed. I didn't need to know anything else. People said, you must, and I said, okay, that was fine. So getting into that was really kind of amazing to me. And then after the fact, understanding that, oh, the original production was considerably not as Cirque du Soleil, but to see Andrea Martin, you know, go upside down and be, you know, in her really like a bikini or, you know, it's a costume, of course, but to see how acrobatic and athletic that Andrea Martin is in this is just spectacular. You know, and I love Andrea Martin, so when I say this, it's meant with love, but she's not a spring chicken. And so I kept thinking, oh, my God, this lady's
right.
going to break her
exactly.
back, or, you know, she's going to fall and, you know, crack her head, and tonight's going to be that night. So to have another actress as accomplished as Lucy Arnaz go into this role, and, you know, again, not a spring chicken. I am in awe and huge, even bigger fan, I think, of Lucy Arnaz now, knowing that she's going to tackle this role.
Yeah, she was talking about the, you know, the training that she went through, and
what do
how,
you do? Did you, I mean,
well, they, you know, they put you through several weeks of, she said it wasn't really quite boot camp, but what she loved about it was that she didn't think that at her age, at 63, she could tone and develop and strengthen her core and her muscles. And what she has found is that, like, all those aches and pains that she had before, not that she was, like, in, you know, huge pain, but, you know, you get older and, you know, if you don't move around and you don't keep active, you know, you tend to feel that, you know, you kind of feel whatever. And so she was really surprised that at her age, she was telling me, that she could really do that and develop a really kind of, she told me she has a whole new physique, basically, you know.
I was going to say, she's probably like a hot mama now.
Exactly. So she was full of, I mean, you know, it was a Monday, and she was in Denver, and it was, a, you know, afternoon, and she was, you know, full of pep. So, I mean, you could just tell, like, you know, she's kind of in that zone, you know, when you talk to people in shows, they're sort of in that universe, and you just kind of want to touch them and get that good juju, you know, kind
yeah.
of just have it spill all over you. So, yeah, so she, yeah, it's a good interview. I'll be posting it on the Huffington Post in about a week or so, and it'll be in the San Francisco Examiner toward the end of the month in a shorter version, but the longer Q&A on Huffington Post. But, yeah, she's terrific. She's really terrific. So if you're, you know, check out, you know, for folks that are listening, if, you know, you're into theater, check out the, you know, touring schedule of Pippin. And I know that after Denver goes to San Francisco, then it goes through, I think, south to L.A. and around and things like that. I think it hits St. Louis by November or December or something like that. So it'll be touring for a while. I think it gets to Chicago next year sometime. So they're going to have to wait. They are going
to have to
wait
just a tiny little bit. Well, and speaking of interviews and things that you've done, and I've asked you this before the show tonight, so I know that you're kind of expecting this, but recently, in the last couple of years, you've had the honor and opportunity to interview Joan Rivers before her passing this last week. Can you share any of your favorite memories and time with her? Just, you know, because everybody's asking that, but, you know, the overwhelming sense that we get from people, but everybody's story is different, is that she was just such a wonderfully giving and kind and generous person. And, you know, of course, you have then your stage persona, which is body and maybe sometimes a little irreverent and inappropriate. And so what was it like getting your first interview with her compared to your last?
Well, it was all of it, like, was very serendipitous for me. But I tend to, that tends to happen in my kooky, crazy Polish life. But, I mean, I remember, I mean, it all started, I remember walking down in San Francisco, you know, and seeing this thing, you know, that she was coming. She was developing a one-woman show, and the name of it escapes me right now, but it was, she was developing it for Broadway, and they were going to, potentially to go to Broadway, and they were going to test it out in San Francisco and L.A., and they had, but San Francisco is one of the first places that they tested out, and that, the name will come to me at some point, but it was basically, yeah, so I saw this sign, and I was like, I got to write about her, got, you know, some information and was going to write about her for the San Francisco Examiner, saw the show, and, you know, happened to serendipitously sit next to a friend of hers who came in late, wonderful man named Henry, funny, very New York, wrote with her, for her, and it was just a great connection. He just sat at the edge of the aisle and, you know, and we kind of chatted it up. But the show, I thought, was great. I mean, it kind of got mixed reviews when it went on, but it was basically, basically a look at her life. There was a lot of multimedia elements in it, you know, with the TVs and things like that, past interviews, things that she's done. But it was kind of woven into sort of a play. So it's almost as if you were seeing sort of a fiction thing unraveling, but it really was, you know, sort of a glimpse of her funky life. And it all took place in a dressing room, in her dressing room, before she's going off to the red carpet, and it was all, you know, about how the red carpet has changed, what she had done for the red carpet, and so it was very fascinating. So I met her for that, got to, you know, talk to her for that, which was brilliant. She's, and then she kind of did an impromptu show at the Raz. It was not the Raz Room then, but it was the Plush Room in San Francisco. Just like one quick night, which is what she always seems to, like, you know, just kind of like pops in and does like a comedy show, like a stand-up act for, like, you know, 90 minutes in the town, and just keeps herself very fresh and on the ball. And she just is, I mean, as everyone knows or should know by now, I mean, her mind was very sharp. She was just so on the ball, and that show that night at the Plush Room was amazing. And this was like on a Monday night, and I think she was, you know, doing the show that I just spoke of, like, you know, Tuesday, Wednesday, something, you know, for like about a week or so. So to be doing all that, you know, I think she only got like 4 hours of sleep for the last, you know, 30 or 40 years, you know, every night.
Right.
On the go.
I'll sleep when I'm dead, you know.
And seriously, I mean, yeah, that's what her close friend was mentioning to me this week as things were going on. So, you know, met her, talked to her several times at that point in San Francisco. Just extremely genuine. I mean, you know, she's a sort of force of nature on stage, larger than life. And then you sort of meet her afterward, and she's, you know, she's not tall. She's short. She's very genuine and very humble.
Right.
And very, just I very.
I can see why you two clicked.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't like, you know, baking cookies with each other or anything, but we talked a little bit about my Polish family, because she was telling me about her, you know, family a little bit, and she seemed a little bit interested in my crazy history. And so that was really the first time. And then the second time was for the Advocate, when she was doing some comedy festival, the Edinburgh Comedy Festival. That was about maybe a year later. And then about another year later, what became the Comedy Central roast of Joan Rivers, and got to talk to her again on the red carpet.
You were inside for that too.
Yeah, that was a trip. That was really kind of one of the first ones where, you know, for Comedy Central, where they kind of got some bigger people. Because, I mean, not that the people before that weren't big, but something kind of happened with that one. That one drew a lot of attention. It was great to interview her on the red carpet, and she was really you know, I was asking her who she's most inspired by right now as far as, you know, on the comedy scene, and she gave all, you know, her answers were all about women, you know, Kathy Griffin, Sarah Silverman, I believe she may have mentioned Amy Schumer, and she said, you know, all women, and I thought that was really great, and of course, you know, she paved the way for the life
Everybody.
Of Kathy Griffin and a lot of comedic female forces out there right now, so... I was really touched when I was watching Anderson Cooper interview Kathy Griffin about Joan Rivers, and, you know, it was really hard for Kathy Griffin to keep it together last week. So, but I think, you know, as we all can probably attest, I think everyone really dug her. They loved her. And it was a shock that, you know, boom, you know, she's no longer here, but, wherever she is, I'm sure it's, you know, she's on the go and, it's, you know, there's a lot of laughter going on. So, so it was good. I connected with some of her, like one of her really close friends, Henry, for the past week, and it was good to talk to him and get a little bit of inside behind-the-scenes stuff. And, of course, he's very New York, so you get this, you know, behind-the-scenes New York thing. So it's sort of like, you know, you're talking about a person that, and there's a funeral, but, you know, there's sort of this dark humor that he's bringing. He's like, she would have wanted it this way. She would have wanted people to laugh. So he's a great guy, too. So they had just gone to a movie, like, Sunday before, and we're talking about age and, you know, kind of dropping it, you know, with, like, you know, you never know. Yeah, I was really affected. You know, I'm still pretty much affected by that because, I mean, it kind of like put a fire under me. It's like, you know, it sort of goes back to the whole theme of Pippin. We kind of have this moment now. It's like, what are we going to do with mm-hmm. it? You know, I mean, and you know, are we going to like sit and kind of listen to the circus in our mind or just kind of, you know, show up and go for it? So, yeah, I think she is a good example for a lot of people, you know, on a lot of levels, you know. So she's great. It's great. Yeah, I have so many great thoughts when I think of her, and I'm very grateful that I've had a chance to connect with her and some people around her and keep it real. And it was really great, really great. Absolutely.
Well, I'm glad you are able to share those stories with us, because I know that so many people that, you know, you meet in your line of work or our line of work, you know, you meet them and you're like, oh, I really could have done without meeting that one. And you have met some really tremendous people that just have left such an indelible impression upon your soul. And I think Joan really was one of those, because every time you talk to her in the time that I've known, you were like, oh, my God, I'm going to go see Joan again. And it was just like, what a cool experience for you to be able to share, you know, on a personal level and to say, I'm going to go see Joan, you know, I'll call you later. And you're just like, okay, he's going to go see Joan. And how many, this is like an icon and, you know, somebody that you got to know a little bit on a personal level as well. And that's always cool. So, well, let's get back to the real item at hand. I selfishly wanted to have you gush about that because I love your stories, and I could just sit, you know, to be like, Papa, tell me another story, but you're too young. So, yeah. So the real reason
this year,
I asked you tonight is to talk. Yeah, well, yeah, you got a while to go, but the real reason I asked you here, of course, is to talk about your new book, and then part of the reason that you're on here also not only is to talk about the book before it comes out next year, but there's a very important reason you're on several months before this is all taking place. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. I have put on my crowdfunding trousers and gloves, and I am crowdfunding, I tell you.
What does that mean?
An amazing experience. I'm funding with crowds. I'm having crowds fund me. I am being funded. Let's see, what does that mean? I joke, but I don't joke. Let's see. So here's the scoop. I think as many writers out there know, the publishing industry continues to go through a curious identity crisis, as do a ton of newspapers and publications and whatnot. I mean, USA Today just laid off tons of people. But as far as the publishing industry, like book publishing, And even if you're famous, you still have to do a lot of your own, you know, book publicity and book PR. So the publisher I have, Norlights Press, they're very, very good. But like a lot of independent publishers, they don't have a huge PR budget. I wanted this book to come out around the 75th anniversary of the mass deportation of the Poles, of Stalin's, you know, deporting the Poles in the 1940s, which my family survived. And that anniversary is in February of next year, February 2015. And so I was sort of limited to who I could, you know, there were about three different publishers that could do it. But this one stood out for a few reasons. Because I actually got a sign, they should do it. So I took the sign. I'm like, okay, got it. And so they're publishing it. And I am pretty much going to use whatever savings I have, you know, to offset, you know, some book publicity costs. And there's a really great book publicist in L.A., Julia Drake. She's fantastic, and she's worked with some author friends of mine, and I want to use her.
Believe it or not, people don't work for free.
They don't. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Except some writers. Now, that is particularly interesting. So, so I'm going to use her. And beginning in October, you know, 3 months prior, the book will probably come out in end of January. So I want to use her for, like, you know, 4 to 5 months, you know, before the book is released, because which is vital to get the word out to press, to lead times and this and that. And then, you know, several months, you know, as the book is, you know, out and ready and an event and creating a certain, you know, big launch event and things like that. And so, of course, that takes a certain amount of money. So I decided to, you know, create a crowdfunding event for about a month through the end of September, or at least the beginning of October, to just, you know, see what happens, and then just invite people to come on board, not just to, like, fund this thing and have it be funded, but to really actually partake in something that maybe that they can relate to, which is, you know, finding out about your own roots and also helping bring to light or about the 1940s, which is the mass deportation of Poles that Stalin initiated, that really hasn't seen the light of day. And many people know what Hitler has done to the Jewish population, and rightly so, but very few are aware of what Stalin has done to, you know, between 1 to 2 million Poles and, you know, a lot of his own people and millions of other, you know, people within that region. And so the book illuminates a lot of that, and I felt very drawn to, you know, tell the story for my family. I actually got a, you know, classic case, I got a sign to follow the thread to pursue this and write a story on it. And so that's pretty much what I've been doing for the last decade, and especially last year. So I'm now inviting people, like, well, come on board, partake in this. You know, it's not really about me and this book. I mean, it is, but it's not really. It's really about getting this story out, like, you know, getting this underreported story about this particular time period, and really honoring those people who, you know, A, survived this, you know, amazing part of his, you know, history, and those who didn't, you know, millions died. And by some stroke of luck, the majority of my family, not all of them, but the majority of them did survive and lived to tell about it. And, you know, many of them I interviewed, and over and over and over again, to get, you know, the details and the rich, amazing, you know, juicy elements of their journey down, so that I could, you know, share it with people. So I'm crowdfunding. So, you know, people go to my website, gregarcher.com, and they click on the spiraling red and white ball on the lower right-hand side. They'll get to the crowdfunding page. It'll have a video there. It'll tell you all sorts of other things about it.
Can I ask an all-important question here? Because I think so highly of you that there is absolutely nothing in this world that you cannot do, Mr. Archer. So as somebody who is a writer, and you've been on TV, you've had your own, you know, TV programs, you've been on the red carpet, you've done all of these things. Why have you chosen not to try to be your own publicist for this and maybe save a buck or two?
Well, a couple of reasons. I could do it, and I could probably do it very well. I did it with the last book. I feel like my energy would be better served for the project if I focus on, you know, I really want to go out there and talk to, you know, not just, you know, have book events where I'm at, either at a bookstore or at a particular organization, but I want to go to universities, talk to, you know, history departments, cultural study departments, a lot of Polish organizations. I really want to focus my efforts on developing a book, not so much a book talk, but, you know, a talk that, and a multimedia presentation that would go along with this book, which not only covers the details of the book and Stalin and the deportations, but also illuminates a journey of self-discovery and also how what happens before us tends to live on through us, because there are some spiritual elements to my book. I mean, you know, I'm kind of a spiritual California woo-woo guy sometimes, and I really felt drawn and led to pursue this, and it really got me and wasn't going to let go. And I want to talk about those things that are sort of hard to step into that we might tend to avoid and resist, and yet how much beauty there is when you actually step into it and go through that thing that you know you're supposed to do that doesn't feel very comfortable, and you walk through it, you know, like on a bunch of nails, and you kind of come out the other side very different person. I'm a very different person than I was 2 years ago. I mean, we all are, but I really kind of followed a very unique thread that I never thought, you know, I ever would, or ever thought I'd ever emerge from, really. So we all have such rich histories from our family, and I think the more we are open to step into that, we learn not only about ourselves, but about the strength and the courage and sometimes the madness of those that came before us. So, wow, I really sound like I know what I'm talking about. This is amazing.
Well, you do. And really what I wanted you to get to and you spoke to is the fact that, you know, as the author and the storyteller of this book, you really want to focus on telling the story and not just setting up the next date. You want to leave that to the pros who have the connections, who can just, you know, go make that happen so you can really focus on telling your most authentic story with the most heart and emotion that you can, given the resources that you have available to you. So, you know,
exactly.
So that's why everybody needs to go to Greg's, you know, crowdfunding page. I think I put the link on the show content today. So if you click that, it should take you to Greg's page, and it gives you a little option to, you know, hit the PayPal and make a generous donation towards funding, really just, you know, sharing Greg's story about his family. And what can you actually take us back as listeners? Cause I swear, if you were like 30 years older, I'd call you Grandpa and say, Grandpa, tell me that next story. But in writing Chasing Grace, you actually went to Poland. You've been to Chicago. You've been to see the relatives. You've done the interviews. You've talked to people. You have done so much in this book that it is just, I mean, it oozes out of you. And it really is such a heartfelt tale. And I mean, I can't wait to read the book. And I haven't, I mean, all I know is the kind of like the brief blurbs that you would share with me. And I was like, I need to know more.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for those that are tuning in, I would call it an Eat, Pray, Love by way of a Polish Carrie Fisher and a Polish Alex Haley all rolled up into bed with each other, something like that. It's both haunting and humorous at the same time. I mean, you kind of have to find some, there's a lot of dark humor when you turn and face your own neuroses and also your family's. But yeah, I went to, you know, 2 years ago, I mean, and I talk about it in the book, I really got assigned to explore my family story more, and I won't give away how that happened, but it was so obvious and so, like, I mean, we all have these sort of serendipitous moments where we're like, okay, that was weird, so either I'm going to pay attention to that or you know, things are just, you can't just chalk up as coincidence. So, so I got assigned to follow a thread. I followed a thread. Things kept happening and coming before me. A long-lost Polish cousin that I never knew crawled out of the woodwork, emailed me, and told me that they read my story on which this article is based, you know, that came out like many years ago. And that generated a whole new series of things that opened up a possibility to go to Poland. And then I somehow found myself in Poland and exploring Poland and, you know, parts of, you know, the region where my family lived, and all with a kooky, crazy, fun Polish cab driver with a round, happy Polish face, you know, driving through rural Poland and looking for my ancestors' roots and where they were from. And I'm giving you a little bits, but there's more detail. But yeah, it was a very wild, kind of spiritual, fun romp. Finding myself in a cemetery looking for graves, you know, of my relatives. I didn't even know the cemetery existed, and finding amazing things there and meeting interesting people there. And Poland was absolutely amazing. It really kind of felt like I was in some sort of quantum time bubble. I know that sounds kind of funky and woo, but when I was going back to the places from which my family came, it really kind of felt like a moment ago they were just there, and now suddenly I kind of showed up. You know, it's real. Like I thought, okay, the air feels very different, or like the air. Am I feeling this? But it really kept on. It didn't just go away. It kept happening throughout that whole day of when I was in this one particular place, and there were some very amazing moments. So,
That.
Yeah.
So, okay, so do we have a timeline on your global funding project? Is there, I mean, obviously the call for urgency is tonight because, you know, tonight I've got you on the show. But is there a timeline? What happens if you don't make the goal? Do you get her for a little bit of time? Can you kind of give some scenarios on what you're planning to do once this is successful for you?
Yeah. I will make the goal. I don't know, there's something like, you know, the first week, first 10 days already, we have done very well. So I have a good feeling. I mean, things are just sort of opening and happening. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, people have come forward that I'm like, wow, okay, you know, thank you. Which is great. And the Polish community in Chicago, for instance, is really coming together, and they're like, oh wow, there's a book coming out about this, and you know, this is great. I mean, and the 70th anniversary, wow. But I'm keeping the campaign open until the end of September,
okay.
Maybe the first few days of October. In some weird case scenario, I don't, you know, get what I need. We have like a $7,500 or $8,000 goal, and we're like maybe at $2,000, I think, right now, which is okay. It's a good place to be right
yeah,
now.
It's a nice starting point.
Yeah. And for some weird reason I don't get it, I'm coming back on the show and I'm hounding everybody. No. I am giving out.
We told you to go donate. How come you didn't donate? Yeah.
I mean, you know, if people donate like a good, like a nice, you know, chunk of money, then I am making homemade. I mean, this is really what's happening. I will be making homemade Polish pierogi, you know, with my mother, and I will be sending those out to people donating $100 or more.
Seriously?
It's right on the page.
We get free food.
And these are like, you get free food and a book, I think. I forget what I put on there, but it's something like that, yeah.
I would do it just for the food. I'd do it a second time to get the book. But I see the pictures, Greg, that you post when you're back in Chicago. And I know you know, when you have a chance to be back home, you know, you're always posting pictures. Here's what my mom and I made today. Here's what we made. That food, I think, would make me gain about 400 pounds, and I would do it with a smile.
Yeah, it's like carb overload. Carb overload. It's great.
it looks delicious. So it's not that it's the carb overload. It's, I think the food would taste so good that I couldn't just stop at like one. It's like, oh, I'll have a cucumber and a baby carrot. No, I'd like this tray and the one that's in the oven, and you go get another one.
Exactly. You cannot get out. You cannot get off. You know, away from the table without having at least a dozen or more of those succulent beasts slathered in butter. Lots of onions on top, fried onions, amazing. So yeah, so people that donate, about $100 or more or something like that, they're going to get, a nice, beautiful care package of that around the time of the book coming out. And so that'll be good, which is just time for the holidays, too. I mean, it'd be great to get a whole package of Polish pierogies for the holidays. But so that's, one little perk. And, other perks, I think, once again, like as I mentioned before, just being part of something that, I don't know. I mean, to me, this thing was a lot bigger than me. I mean, I had so many opportunities to not do it, and I really felt like these, it's weird, I felt like, I was telling somebody the other day, I felt like I've been kind of like visited or haunted by ghosts for the last decade or maybe all my life, and then suddenly like now this project is sort of finished in this one phase. They sort of left the living room, and I'm like, okay, well, where did everyone go? It's a really disorienting feeling. But
can we talk about that a little bit? I mean, because
you
and I have kind of had off the line comments, and I told you when I first met you in person, I said, Greg, I've turned into California, and you knew exactly what I meant when I said that. But can you maybe just, because I don't want you to give away the story, but can you give away maybe some of the things that were just pulling at you, And it's not necessarily something somebody said, or maybe it was, but how did you decide that, this is a story that needs to be told? And what were some of the things that compelled you to say, I'm making this happen, come hell or high water? And what were some of the things that maybe you said, does anybody really want to read this? And you're finding out that everybody wants to read it.
Well, without giving it away, I got a very specific,
I don't want you to give the key thing away, because that's, not asking you for that, but just as a, because, you've been an entertainment writer, you've written a book about body image, you've done TV, you've done all of these other things, so saying, I think I'm going to write this huge thing is, I think for a writer, number one, I think it'd be fascinating to say, I'm done with a puff piece. I'm going to do something serious. But then to do something serious about your family is really brilliant.
Yeah, well, I got a very specific sign. I mean, and it was just, I couldn't ignore it. I mean, I could have, but I couldn't have. Actually, I did at first. I did ignore it, come to think of it. I did, and I talk about that in the book. And it was a very funny sign that I got. It was so obvious. And I ignored it. And then I will say this, it was about maybe 6 months later, I was sitting across from Ian McGregor in the Ritz, in San Francisco, and he had come out with this movie. He was there in a junket, and I was interviewing him for this movie, Salmon Fishing in the River Yemen, or whatever. It came out, several years, while back, and I was sitting across from this magnanimous Hollywood performer, this star, this guy with perfect hair. I mean, there was not a flaw on this guy. And he was talking so eloquently, and all the things he was saying were very, very interesting. And I don't know if it was not a body experience. I don't know what was going on, but I was just sitting there listening to him, and I noticed how I was feeling. And I was very shocked by how I was feeling, because I'm like, oh, my God, I'm bored. And I'm like, and then, that thought came up, and I'm like, how could you be bored? You're sitting across from Ian McGregor. He's, like, brilliant. He's a great actor. He's like, look at his face. He doesn't even have to put any facial cream on in his hair. And missiles were being launched in my brain. It's like, one side of my brain was like, it's Ian McGregor. What's wrong with you? You can't be bored. And then I'm like, oh, God, I'm so bored. Do I have to really do this interview? And it was like, I thought, okay, I have a split personality. It's time to go on meds. It's just time to take 20 milligrams. And so so it was like, okay, something is going on, because this whole life that I had built up about, like, writing about people in the industry and being a part of Hollywood and the red carpet stuff, while very fun and frothy and entertaining and great, too. I mean, and I think there was something that was really calling me to go, to not dismiss it and say it was all, you know, for naught, but to maybe put it aside for a little bit and explore something deeper that was, like, gnawing on me, which were pretty much my ancestors, the feeling that there was this other deeper story to tell, and not just to tell their story, but to sort of clear my own psyche of it in a way so that I can learn and grow for myself, you know. And it was like a crowbar, like the universe taking a crowbar going, okay, how much longer are we going to, mm-hmm. you know, sit around kind of swirling around here, not fully satisfied with the things that you're doing before you step into this whole other arena where we're asking you to grow and look at yourself and look at the patterns that you created in your life and see how they reflect back on patterns that maybe your family had before you and do some inner work. I mean, that's really kind of what it came to. So it was a combination of a bunch of things. So.
But now that the book is done, because I'm going to fast forward, and the book is a big hit, and, you know, you'll quickly forget who Garrett is and all of this kind of stuff along the way, and you sit down and say, you know what, it's time for me to write my next big American novel. Now that you've, you know, it's off getting, you know, bound and published and pretty and all of that good stuff, have you had even a second to think about, you know what, I want to do this next?
Oh, yeah.
And if you have, what is it?
It's called Press One for More Options, and it's going to be a fun book. It's a series of essays sort of loosely strung together in the way that maybe Wade Rouse, a great writer, would have done, or even David Sedaris in a way. Of course, you know, he's brilliant. But something similar like that, and it revolves around my spiritual proclivities, I would say, I don't know if spiritual, but my sort of California wanderings of, you know, kind of looking for insight, signs, that thing outside of us, only to kind of learn that it's kind of inside, really. I mean, it's outside, but it's kind of inside. And a lot more about my kooky, amazing, brilliant, delicious, loving, very loud Polish family, and some of the experiences that I've had with them recently and over the last few years, you know, as I've been kind of going through this. But it's been fun to get to know them as people and to and not just these sort of, you know, family figures, but to get to know them as people who survived something spectacular by some stroke of luck and really, you know, I have such a deep newfound respect for my family. I mean, it takes me months to get over a mood swing sometimes, and I don't know how they survived what they survived, you know, going through the deportations, being sent to a slave labor camp in Siberia, getting, you know, released, and then wandering to Uzbekistan with, you know, hundreds of thousands of other Poles, and somehow ending up in the Middle East, and somehow by some stroke of luck being one of them, like maybe 30,000 that happened to get out of Russia, and, you know, and somehow find themselves in a Polish orphanage in Tanzania, Africa. So, I mean, like, how do you survive that, you know? And it takes me months to get over a mood swing because, you know, I'm feeling, you know, insecure about something. So I have no idea how they did it. It's fascinating to me. So, the next book is called Press One for More Options. It's sort of like a kind of full of neuroses.
I can't wait for Chasing Grace, but I'm loving the concept behind this already too. So this will be fun. You're on your way, Mister.
Yeah, and I think today. Yeah, in fact, today I started a new blog, Press One for More Options. So people can go to that. It's on my website, and they can look at
that.
Does that
help you as a writer when you're doing a blog to kind of, you know, not maybe give you more of like an outline of, okay, here's what's going to go in the book?
Yeah, it does. It really does. I think a lot of writers need to just kind of get it out and just, you know, kind of get stuff on paper, but I'm being presented, and I have been for a while, like with such amazing opportunities to, I mean, it seems like the universe is just dropping them, like, this is material, like, use it as material, you know, just, it's not just like some little event, I mean, use it as material. So I'm becoming, I'm kind of like, okay, I get it. So really, like, everything is material that way. I go into a Starbucks and order something, it's like, it becomes a story, so, you know. Yeah, like today, I went to Starbucks and I decided to pay for the guy who was behind me. I don't know how I found
pay
that.
It forward.
Just the other day. Yeah, you know, and I don't know, was it somebody's paycheck? So I paid for his, you know, drink, and he paid for the guy behind him, and that guy paid for, like, the guy. It was really kind of cool to watch it all unfold. I didn't plan on doing that when I got there. It was just sort of like this weird kind of kooky moment, but it
isn't
all
that funny how just
great.
Something simple, you know, just changes somebody's entire day, and they just say, you know what, I'm going to do the same thing. And, you know, it's like they're going to spend the $5 or however much a coffee costs at Starbucks anyway, or McDonald's or Burger King or Taco Bell, whatever the case is. And it's, you know what, I'm just going to do this. And it just changes everything. And here you are talking about it. And we've got hundreds of people listening tonight who are hearing this story. And it's just freaky stuff like that that makes the world go around and become a better place. And you are king of making the world a better place.
Ah, well, you're sweet. Your check is in the mail. Thank you for saying
okay,
that.
There we go.
Your check is in the mail.
Well, Greg, believe it or not, we're getting close to the time that we're going to call it a wrap for tonight. I want to end our segment by playing a song by musician Joseph Eid, who I heard last night at Room 5, which was closing for some reason. I think the owner sold or, you know, something like that. So it's been an independent music artist venue Sunday nights for the last 9 years. And last night
wow.
was the last night ever that they had people perform. So we're going to hear, as we wrap up our time together, Something Real by Joseph Eid. You can actually see the music video on YouTube. It's kind of funny. So here you go. Greg Stanley
nice.
Will be back in just a couple of minutes. Hang tight.
You say I don't communicate, but I only like to speak from my soul. You say things with your words, but you never say them with your eyes. And I guess that's how this story goes. You're like a robot, 1, 2, 3. You read books on how you should feel. You got a gifted mind, but it ain't connected to your heart. And I wonder sometimes if you're real. But maybe it's your generation and your sexist conversation. My sweet time, I don't spill it all out like cheap wine. You got to earn this love degree. Yeah, you do. And baby, it's like alienation when your sex are conversation. And you love me so, so much. For me, yeah, I'm for me.
And I don't have a problem with emotion. I just don't like to rub it all over like lotion. You say I don't communicate, but I think there's a time, there's a place. You sent me a real cute YouTube and you put it all up on Twitter too. But baby, this bird needs some face to face. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And maybe it's your generation and your text conversation. And you love me so, so strong on your close, so you feel it. My words may be far between. Baby, I know that we're digital, but darling, we're still human after all. And I like to use a phone sometimes to make a voice call. And I don't want to spend my deepest moments alone with a screen just hidden stand.
Joseph Eid with Something Real. That's off of his album Human, which is available on iTunes and wherever fine music is sold, of course. So again, Greg Archer is still with us. So Greg, thank you so very, very much for being on the show tonight. As always, it's a pleasure to hear your voice and what's going on in your world. And I can't wait for everybody to go to your crowdfunding page and, you know, give $100 more, because the real secret is we all want your mom's Polish cooking.
There you go. I mean, you know, it's a win-win. And thank you so much for having me on it. I love that song. That's an amazing song.
Isn't that fun? Yeah, I'll have to.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can have him send you a CD or something like that in the mail, and maybe you can write an article or something. Who knows? But well,
Absolutely. Everybody.
Here is what's on board for the rest of the week. We have Tarot Tuesday. Tarot Jeff is back tomorrow on Tuesday night, so you'll have your chance to ask a five-minute question. Well, you don't get to ask a five-minute question. You get 5 minutes with him. It's a three-card read. You can say, what are in the cards for me, or a specific question. Wednesday night, you're going to hear me be impressed by a 22-year-old. You'll know why, because R.J. Tolson is a classically trained musician. He's an author of science fiction works that have over 9 million regular viewers from his blog. He owns his own holding company, which has 5 different divisions, along with a charitable trust. And he's a senior in college right here in Southern California. We're going to talk to R.J. Tolson live on Wednesday night. Entertainment guru Dennis Hensley is our special guest on Thursday. And then Friday, Fontaine's Muse. If you've never heard of Fontaine's Muse or are not a regular Friday Night Dance Party listener, you have got to listen, because I am trying to expand my musical horizons by bringing you some of the funnest people. I have to like them as people first, and then their music is secondary, except this, in their case, their music is really, really awesome. So Fontaine's Muse is a local husband and wife band here in Southern California, and he plays the Indian sitar, and she sings music. And on one of the 4 CDs that I have, I've got to find 12 songs. I don't know how I'm going to get down just to 12 for this, but we're going to do a special live 2-hour Friday night dance party with Fontaine's Muse on Friday at 6 p.m. I've got to see if they've got their Somewhere Over the Rainbow version of this. And I thought when they started playing this, I said, I think I've just lost my mind. But the truth of the matter is that Flash, that's what he goes by, that's his stage name, Flash plays the Indian sitar. They have these great, you know, drum beats that they've got on a drum machine or whatever magic they were working up. And Fontaine sings like there is no tomorrow. So we are really super lucky to have Fontaine's Muse on the show this Friday night. And Greg Archer, with that, the show is up. Our time is done. It's time to go to bed in Palm Springs or wherever you are going to lay your head tonight, people. Any last words of stuff before we sign off?
Yes, get out of your own way. It just makes it all the much easier. That's all I have to say. Thank you so, so much.
Okay, we'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great
night,
everybody.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.